You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
So this year, I was fortunate enough to speak in Southern Colorado at a conference and meet a lot of amazing local people. One of the people I met there was a lady called Karen Willis, and we started talking about her background and where she worked, and it emerged that she had founded and set up her own nonprofit. And whatever way it came up, I can't really remember, but we started talking about founder syndrome, this idea that, you know, you've read about lots of times, this idea that the founder, as the organization grows, can actually be a negative thing for the organization. You know, they impose their ideas on other people, they overrule the board. There's all sorts of baggage that they bring into this that maybe hold back the organization. And it was really interesting to hear Karen start to talk about it and get fired up about it as a founder. And so I've asked her to come on this podcast, and she has been so good to join me today. Hello, Karen. How are you?
Hello, Simon. I'm well. How are you doing?
Are you? I'm good. Are you all set for Christmas and Krampus?
Yes, yes. Krampus was last night, and yeah, very exciting.
Yes, but you're all safe and no issues, no problems?
Yes, I'm able to speak with you today because I did not get a visit from Krampus, so all is well.
That's a relief. That's a relief. That's always good to hear. And so who are you, Karen? What is your organization?
Our organization is called Bridge for Pelvic Pain, based in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Okay. And what is pelvic pain? Is it just what it sounds like?
It is, but there's with lots of things, I'm sure, lots of misconception that it only affects women and very taboo, and because of the part of the body that is affected. But pelvic would be literally anything from belly button to about mid-thigh.
Okay.
And it's, you know, hereditary, accident, injury, fall, adhesions. There are so many things. We could have a separate podcast just discussing pelvic pain and pelvic health issues. But part of what we do is education for the medical community. We really embrace integrative treatments, as well as supporting the patients who have these conditions, as well as their caregivers.
Okay. And so you set up this organization because it's obviously something you care about, something that's in your life, and something you wanted to do, you know, do something about it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So personally, I was affected with a couple of pelvic pain conditions that I overcame through a lot of hard work and a lot of integrative medical treatments. And so basically wanted to give back and help others. And so that is what actually formed the initial idea. Initially, I had a website and blog helping people, talking to patients all over the world. Ran that for a couple of years and felt, you know, I'm helping people, but am I really, really helping people? And so that really led me towards kind of settling back in and realizing that there was a gap in the pelvic pain community, and decided to do what I needed to do to start a nonprofit.
Yeah, and how has that process been? How has it been being one of these founders for the last few years?
You know, I try and tell people it's equal parts passion and a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, but I did, and I did, and I do consider all of the work that you put into a nonprofit very, very similar to a for-profit entrepreneur. And so there's a lot of work behind the scenes. I spent more than a year before I even filed for the nonprofit of doing a SWOT analysis.
Okay.
You know, what other, you know, nonprofits are out there? How are they similar? What is our mission going to be? What are the key people that are going to be a part of this organization on the board, on other leadership? Who within the Colorado Springs community can we work with? But then also always knowing from the start where we wanted to end up as an organization. So there's a lot of I guess, business practices that go into the nonprofit world. But I sometimes feel like when you are talking as a nonprofit founder, sometimes all people hear are the words nonprofit or charity. And so you're not always taken quite as seriously, I feel, as if you are an entrepreneur of a for-profit business.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because there's that balance between it is setting up a business, it is an enterprise, you have to be an entrepreneur, but then there is that element of passion. And yeah, you know, people in startups have passion for their project, but this is a really strange business. You're almost running two businesses, where it's like the monetary and fundraising side that you have to run like a business and be profitable. And then the other side of it, the compassionate side, where you have to run it at a loss in a certain way. You know, it has to be emotionally positive, but financially, it doesn't really make sense to help people financially.
Exactly. But you can't do one without the other. You cannot put forward a nonprofit mission to help people if you don't have the bones of the operation, if you will, in alignment and being very strategic about what you're trying to accomplish from the beginning. Before you even file, you should really spend a lot of time kind of analyzing and thinking that through. And yes, there's a lot that happens behind the scenes, just creating the infrastructure of a nonprofit. I mean, everything from creating your name and your logo and all of the documents that you file. I'm not sure how it works, you know, in other countries, but in the U.S. there are quite a few documents that you have to file, and you have to pay for some of those, and everything is kind of an order of operations, even doing that. Yes, your name, your logo, your website, your branding, all of the legal things such as your bylaws. Yeah, there's a lot involved.
Yeah, well, it's heartening to hear you put so much work into before you're being formed. I mean, I work with a lot of different organizations, and often the problem is, I mean, problem is not necessarily the best word to use, but nonprofits are formed out of someone's passion. You know, they're formed because someone wants to change something in the world, and they're very often formed sat around a kitchen table or sat in a cafe or a bar, and it's a group of people or a person who says, this has to change. And very often people don't, I feel like they don't take a step back and do the SWOT analysis and look at the finances and even raise money before they launch this new enterprise, for want of a better word. That's part of what makes the charity sector so lovely, that it's like the passion drives it, and we're just going to get this done all the way. But it's also, I think, when nonprofits end up hitting a wall is because they haven't done that stuff in the first hand, and now the project is so big that they're trying to catch up with themselves. Do you know what I mean?
I agree 100%. Absolutely. Because yes, you can be the most passionate person in the world, and you can have this incredible cause. And that is just, you know, so commendable. It's wonderful. But I feel like if you aren't careful and mindful and strategic before you even file, I feel like in some ways that can kind of put I hate to use the word negative, but it puts a different spin on perception of those of us who, you know, are a nonprofit founder or who are fundraisers, or those of us who work in the nonprofit sector, because we might not be taken quite as seriously. Because yes, thousands of nonprofits get formed every year, but they don't always last. I guess the five-year marker is kind of a big deal in the industry to make it 5 years plus. So you really need to be it needs to be a both and. Take that passion, but also come back into your headspace and really think that through. Surround yourself with people from all different industries and backgrounds, and run things, you know, through them. And yes, you brought up the fundraising piece. That is something that we did prior to even filing everything, is that we did a crowdfunding fundraiser for a lot of the pre-setup costs, if you will, of the nonprofit, but also getting the idea out there, getting the excitement. And so we had patients, and we had patient artwork that was one of the gifts that people received when they donated to our crowdfunding campaign. And so people already were expecting us, you know, to come out the gate with this organization and it helped us all become one huge team for our cause before everything was officially filed. I mean, we were all one lovely, you know, bridge for pelvic pain. So, yeah.
It sounds like it's all run pretty smoothly with your board and with everyone around it. Surely there's been, I'm sure in reality, there's been a lot of, not issues, but any conflict, any problems from your point of view as a founder?
Oh, I'm sure all founders have, you know, oh, in hindsight, or if I would have known this, I would have done this differently. But then I feel like if you just completely sat around a room and thought about that, you wouldn't be moving forward. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel like that's where the entrepreneurial spirit really comes into play, where you do have to take some risks. And have I made 110% of, you know, all of the best decisions? You know, probably not. Mm-hmm. But I always feel like you are as good as, you know, the people that you surround yourself with. And so, yes, we've been very fortunate to have just really incredible, passionate people who are located all across the U.S. and the world, who are a part of our mm-hmm. board and our advisory committees. But yes, I'm sure as a when I founded Bridge, I was in my 30s. So I'm sure, you know, in hindsight, there are some things that I could have done a little bit better.
Yeah, can't we all say that? I'm sure. So you talked about that 5-year mark. How many years are you into this? How many years is Bridge for Pelvic Pain around?
Well, thank you for asking. Yes, next month we actually are hitting our 5-year mark as an organization. So yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you sound like a planner, and you've mentioned there a few times your long-term strategic plan and where this is going to go. Where is this going to go? So you've set this up. I'm assuming you want this to carry on long after you're gone. If you, God forbid, got hit by a bus tomorrow, where do you sit in this? What happens to you as a founder?
Yes, I have explained this to our board in conversations and in board meetings. So yes, you always, as a founder, I feel you should have a plan for the hit by a bus scenario and or, you know, future thinking down the road, trying to understand and figure out when is it time, when is it the best time for the organization that you as the founder need to make that transition mm-hmm. away from this passion project, if you will.
Yeah.
And so yes, from inception, I have built in a transition plan for myself at such point in time that, you know, there will be a time that I should step down because, you know, we kind of started, like you said at the beginning of this interview, we started talking about founder syndrome. I know we're going to kind of get back to that. But yes, it is important that you are always thinking about the future of your organization and what is best for it. Kind of like raising a child. You don't anticipate them, you know, living at home with you until they're 50 years old. You know, you're raising that child to become independent and get to that point where they're doing their own thing on their own, you know, with your love.
Yeah.
I see a nonprofit in that same light. So, you know, at inception and you're birthing something and then you've given birth to it, the organization gets older and you're always pushing things forward. You're pushing the mission forward. You're evaluating your programs. You're getting more people with that mission connection. You're continuing the fundraising. But then, yes, as the founder, there does come a point in time when you need to step down. So you're asking me specifically when I am. And yes, I am getting closer and closer to that point of mm-hmm. transition. And that's a very, very bittersweet thing for me mm-hmm. to put probably at this point over 6 years of passion and time into something. But ultimately, the organization isn't about me, and it is about our mission, and it is about building a strong organization that will be around for a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, I like your analogy about the parent with the child. But what's interesting about that is, I mean, very few parents would choose to break that cycle. You know, you don't kick out your child. You right. don't kick them out of the house necessarily.
Right.
It's usually the child's decision to leave.
Yes.
So what's interesting in this scenario is not that the only time you can leave, but most likely the way you're going to leave, Karen, is by your choice, I assume, is it?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Just, you know, as the organization grows and it, I call it wings as it's, you know, getting, you know, different wings and it's building up momentum. Mm-hmm. I feel that it would probably be best for the organization to transition to, you know, the next leader, the next executive director that would have all of the passion and the experience to take, you know, a 5 to 10 or 5 to 15 year old organization to the next level, and so on and so forth.
And so how do you know when the right time has come?
That's probably the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
I'm sure that it's going to be a different answer for every founder. Frankly,
yeah.
Frankly, it is. You had also asked me, you know, a few moments ago, the hit by a bus scenario. So just kind of a little, I guess, sidebar thought would be to always make sure that in addition to your long-term transition plans to step down as the founder, you should always build in a contingency plan for your leadership team on your nonprofit. And so we do have one of those for Bridge, and board members are given copies of that, and that information is updated probably on a yearly basis. So always a good idea to do that.
And what does that look like? Like, what kind of stuff would it say? It's telling them how you do your job. It's telling them everything you know on several pieces of paper.
Yes, yes, very similar. It's a whole entire plan. It's about 5-6 pages long. You know, it looks like, mm-hmm. you know, who's going to be the voice of the organization. Okay. What are the steps that need to be taken to find an interim executive director? Okay. Understanding who has the fiduciary responsibility, where are the passwords kept? You know, all of that information should never be held closely by one person, because if something happens, it could be incredibly catastrophic. And I have heard Colorado Springs has over 2,000 nonprofits based in the city. And I have heard some stories of lovely, lovely founders. And unfortunately, one of them passed away last year, and he didn't have a contingency plan for himself or for his organization. And so hearing something like that, that really breaks my heart. And so, yeah, so people can walk away getting anything from this conversation. I hope that any founder or executive director that they know, I hope they go to them and say, hey, please put together a contingency plan, because your nonprofit is too precious not to.
Yeah, it's really smart. It's really smart of you to have done that, especially in the early days. And I would say easily the vast majority of organizations don't have that. Very few organizations I've ever worked with talk about having something like that.
Wow.
So it makes sense. That it seems like that's probably, this is difficult to say, but almost the easy way out. Like, if you get hit by a bus, the decision is made for you.
Exactly.
And I'm really curious about how you can, how it ever feels right. I'm just thinking, you know, I haven't set up a nonprofit. I can't really imagine. But I wonder, does it ever feel like it's 100% the right decision, that now's the time to start wrapping this up for myself?
Yeah, I honestly, Simon, I feel like you would know.
Yeah.
I just really feel like you would know, because you need to know your strengths. Number one, as mm-hmm. a leader, you need to kind of take a pulse of where the organization is currently and where you see it going down the road. you know, in the next 1 year, what's it going to look like? 3 years, five, where do you see yourself as that leader? And so I feel like that is how a founder could or should know when it's time for them to start transitioning away.
Mm-hmm. And coming back to this founder syndrome, I mean, essentially the idea of founder syndrome stems from the fact that everyone else in the organization thinks it's time, and you, the hypothetical you, doesn't think it's time. Do you know? Would you agree that's what founder syndrome is? It's the rest of the organization look at you saying, this person is having more of a negative impact than a positive impact, and you almost being oblivious to that? Is that what founder syndrome
is? I believe so. And yes, I'm so glad that you're bringing the conversation back around to that, because I get so passionate for some reason. I'm not a cat, but I live with them. So I feel like I literally, the equivalent of my human hackles get raised a little bit, because I started hearing directed towards myself, you know, founder syndrome, when I had barely even filed the paperwork for Bridge. So here we are, you know, less than a year old organization. And, you know, when you tell people what you do, or people who know you, they're asking, oh, hey, did you file your nonprofit? And, you know, you're so excited. And then all you hear is, just make sure you don't get founder syndrome.
Really? Really? So people were sliding that to you right at the beginning?
Yes, right at the beginning. And here we are, a month away from being a five-year-old organization. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I discuss, hey, you know, at some point I'm going to, you know, transition, you know, away as the founder and executive director, I hear, oh, that's so great, because you never want to have founder syndrome. So, yeah. And, you know, literally every blog that you're going to read, every book, there are websites, I've heard lectures, and you never hear a whole lot of other information or kudos or anything about founders unless it's founder syndrome. And I'm really hoping to change that conversation and really say, you know, that maybe could be applied to what, I'm just going to throw a percentage out, 10% of the founder executive directors. You know, I'm sure that does happen, and I can see how that could drag down a nonprofit and its board and its mission. And 100%, I believe that in that scenario, that's not great to have the founder with their, you know, I guess it's an egomaniacal feelings, or their inability to see that the organization has moved past their idea as a founder. Of course, I agree with that, but it's really difficult as a nonprofit founder to be lumped in with people who are that way, and especially when your organization is so young. But especially here in the States, there is just the exact, I guess I'll just call it the exact opposite is true, kind of how we started the conversation. In that, if I were to say, oh, I started this for-profit business and I'm the president and I'm this entrepreneur, and you know, that the accolades and the, oh my gosh, Karen is so amazing. She's this entrepreneur. And wow, that is so amazing. You know, everybody wants to be like her. But the opposite happens though when, yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, if you started a business, if you run a startup, no one would be saying to you, well, when
exactly.
are you going to leave?
Or, oh, that's so great. You're the president of a for-profit. Make sure you don't get president syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think back to when we first met and we're talking face to face. I'm wondering now, did I completely put my foot in it? Because am I one of these people? Because I think that enters my mind because I've seen it happen. There's been, you know, one or two high profile incidences of this in Ireland, especially, where the founder is the problem. But you're right. It is an absolutely tiny percent of the organizations that are out there. There's lots of founders who are doing things right. So I suppose what you're trying to do, or what we're trying to achieve by this conversation, is to say, well, to say what? That actually there's ways around it. It's not inevitable.
Well, there are ways around it. And it is a small percent of the population. And I think it's really, you know, wonderful that there are blogs out there and articles and books in the nonprofit sector written about, hey, you know, make sure, you know, you have a plan in place or train your board if you have a founder who's still. Yes, I mean, that's great. That's wonderful. But the conversation that I'm trying to change is to not presume that every single founder is going to, oh my goodness, they stayed a day too long or a year too long. And it's founder syndrome. And I'm talking to you today from my home office library, where I just happen to have a collection of fairy tales and folklore from all over the world that I collect. And I was thinking about our conversation today, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, am I going to pull down an old copy of Grimm's Fairy Tales? And on page 301, it says, you know, tales of the nonprofit founder with founder syndrome. I mean, it just really has a kind of an old world folklore spin to it.
It's like a horror story, isn't it? That it's soon as you say you're talking to a founder, or as soon as you're setting up, it's like someone wagging their finger at you saying, well, you better be aware of this kind of troll that's underneath the bridge, the founder syndrome.
Yes, absolutely. And we started out the conversation today talking about Krampus, you know, because here we are talking in December. So yeah. I guess maybe in the nonprofit world, the nonprofit syndrome is its Krampus, if you will.
I like that. I like that link. That makes a lot of sense. And so, I mean, let's talk about it, because playing devil's advocate or God's advocate, it does happen. It's out there. And I suppose, you know, as a founder, there's the risk of being an unreliable judge of yourself.
Yes.
And that's I suppose, exactly why when you set up an organization, you have to have a board, you have to have your trustees, because supposedly they're going to level that field a little bit and offer other insights and challenge you. I mean, this is what I hear, or what people say a lot, that your board, Karen, is there to challenge you.
Yes.
And so what kind of board, how do you ensure your board does that? Because I've seen organizations where the board is scared of the founder, or the board defers to the founder because they're, you know, they have this wonderful story or this tragic story that's brought them to that place. How can you be sure that your board is challenging you in the right way?
Well, I think it comes down to a couple of things. So definitely having a diverse board, and diversity to me means they come from different sectors, they're different ages, male and female, all of that. And you create a culture within your board of education of what it takes to be a governing board, as well as education about a nonprofit and following your mission, and then allowing them to, you know, share their opinions and to have discussions and in a mindful way, but also just creating that culture that it's okay to talk about the hard stuff, because ultimately, you know, like discussions I've had with the board, isn't it really ultimately about what's best for the organization and the mission and why you even came to be in the first place? So I'm actually not scared to have those conversations, and it's actually really important for me to kind of take that step back and kind of reevaluate.
And do you think you're bored? Do you think there's any, not fear there, but do you think, you know, they see you as the founder, as the voice of it? Do you think anyone holds back?
I'm not sure, Simon. I mean, I hope not. But yes, that is a good, I guess, kind of a good segue, because when I am, you know, getting to that point of making that transition away from Bridge for Pelvic Pain, I have had a lot of realization. So not only am I close to the organization as the founder, I have that second layer of closeness because I founded the organization because I had the pelvic pain condition. So I'm also coming at it as a patient, which I can be very honest, that's good and bad. You know, that's a plus and a minus. And so, yes, 100%, I'm probably too close to the topic sometimes, and I'm probably too close to all of it.
Tell me about that minus. I mean, I think the positive is kind of obvious because you can speak from your firsthand experience. But what's the minus? How does that manifest itself?
Sometimes even, I mean, just everything. I sometimes kind of wonder, you know, is my marketing content fresh? Am I too close to this because I was a patient first and now I'm the founder executive director? Mm-hmm. It's sometimes harder for me to separate all of that in order to do the best job that we can as an organization. And so recently, you know, I've been working a lot more with a younger generation of people, you know, just helping me with social media and marketing and, you know.
Not millennials. Oh. You've been talking to millennials.
I wasn't even going to say the M word today.
Yeah. Oh, God, I hate them. So you've been embracing that, and I suppose, what is it, like identifying your weaknesses or the gaps in your knowledge?
Yes.
And bringing people in to support you?
Yes, all of that, because, you know, for our organization, these conditions can literally affect this very wide age range, you know, from young children to, you know, people that are in a retirement home. And so that also makes the content and the marketing a little bit more difficult. And then throw in that the fact that the topics and the part of the body impacted are so taboo and can cause embarrassment. There's always that razor's edge. And then, my being so intimately involved with the organization and then being a patient first, I sometimes wonder, you know, Am I getting across the way that I should be? Because I'm kind of like the eye inside of a hurricane, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So because I'm, you know, in the eye of the hurricane, it is so vitally important for me to talk to people that are, you know, being impacted by the hurricane, who are far away from the hurricane. Anybody and everybody who has a different viewpoint than myself.
Well, it's interesting because they talk about one of the symptoms of founder syndrome or founderitis is that you're not open to these other ideas, so that you're almost dismissive of new ideas. You're dismissive of, you know, especially a kind of new generation coming in, and dismissive of people even making suggestions sometimes. Now, you don't strike me as someone who's dismissive of open ideas, but how can you be sure? How can you be sure when you're in the midst of it, and how can other founders be sure that they're not being inadvertently dismissive?
Yeah, you know, that is a wonderful question. And you're stalling. Appreciate that, Simon, because this not only is a conversation, this is really good self-reflection for me, that I feel that that maybe founders need a little bit more. We need to be pushed a little bit more. And so, yeah, I guess it's important, like I said, that you as a founder surround yourself with a core group of people who you trust. But not only that, I want to be, I tell people this, like, please tell me, you know, what needs to change, or what do you really think about that? Mm-hmm. And I don't want an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Because your organization isn't going to improve upon itself if everybody is just saying, you know, this is the best organization ever and your programs are just phenomenal. That really doesn't help me personally as the leader, and it doesn't help the organization to grow. So you're going to have to ask the hard questions and be willing to really listen and accept that perhaps there are some things that need to change in your leadership, that you need to have some openness to changing.
Yeah, and that's not easy.
No, it's not easy for anybody.
Yeah, any area of life, like not even work, not even, you know, it applies across the board. It's hard to self-reflect and it's hard to change.
Absolutely. And again, I'm kind of remiss. So not only, you know, when I'm talking about the core group of people that I talk to, so that doesn't only include, you know, board and advisory committee and core volunteers of our organization. Mm-hmm. I am also referring back to speaking to people such as yourself, other fundraisers, other founders, other people that are a part of the nonprofit sector. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you have to constantly be reading. You need to be aware. Take workshops, take classes. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I periodically have coffee meetings with mentors and other people in the fundraising industry here in Colorado Springs. Because a lot of times it's truly, I don't know what I don't know. I actually didn't work in the nonprofit sector prior to filing Bridge for Pelvic Pain.
What's your background?
So my background was actually in the for-profit sector. I worked for corporate America for most of my career. I also worked for local government. So I just have a lot of, business background and sales and human resources and customer service and marketing, which I feel, my goodness, I mean, all of those skill sets you can directly apply to the nonprofit setting as a founder.
Yeah, and it sounds like you have done in terms of the smart approaches you've made, in terms of the analysis you did before you set up, in terms of the succession plan and the reflection. You know, we talk sometimes about charities being more like businesses, and I think in a lot of ways we shouldn't be, but in some ways we should. And it sounds like you've brought some of those positive things from the private sector into this.
Yes, I feel that you have to, and it's kind of a struggle. And I know, you know, different countries call it different things, and nonprofit and not for profit and charity and all of these words that we use can kind of, I'm going to use that word again, kind of have that negative impact, if you will, in society, because I hate leading with not for profit. I hate even leading that, because at the end of the day, we want our finances to be in the black. At the end of the day, we want the organization to be around forever, just as a for-profit would. And I really just hope that we kind of steer away from that being its focus. Yes, we have a mission. Yes, we're doing good in the world, but we're also running this as a business, and we are savvy and we're professionals. And yes, when you came to Colorado to speak, and I know you yourself, it was a part of a nationally, internationally recognized association of fundraising professionals. Mm-hmm. And that's huge.
That was the AFP, which, you know, I find is a great network. And I had the pleasure to meet you through that. Are there any other networks that you would recommend to people, or where do you find other founders? Where do you guys hang out?
Yes, that was where we met. And so, yes, AFP is wonderful. I've met many great people locally and from all over the U.S. through AFP. In Colorado, we have the Colorado Nonprofit Association. And so they're always offering different classes and workshops. They have an annual large conference that they host every year in March. And so, yeah, they're different. They call them roundtables or, you know, coffee events. And so I try to attend as many of those as I can. We also have an incredible library system. And one of the branches has everything in there is nonprofit resource related. And so you can check out a book. There's a librarian, and that's all she does is help.
Oh, yeah. I met her. And that's amazing, because we don't really have anything like that in Ireland. Okay. And it was so impressive that you have that.
Yeah, great. And of course, everybody knows about Vu and all of the work that he does in the nonprofit and the fundraising sector. So I read, you know, his blog, and
it's his one of your favorites. He's funny, he's quirky,
he's funny, and I think he is, you know, both, and he's funny, but he is also really bringing some important conversations to the table for our industry and making us a professional industry and getting that attention that is needed.
Absolutely. I like him a lot. And what about you? If people want to hear your opinion, do you blog, or where do you put your opinions out there? Do you have time?
Short answer, no. I I wish I had a lot more time, which is why I'm thrilled and grateful to have this time with you today, Simon. I do love, you know, giving talks. So periodically I've given some interviews such as this about nonprofit type topics. Mm-hmm. And I do meet locally with some other nonprofit founders. Okay. And might be mentoring a kind of a newer nonprofit founder soon, which again feels really good to be able
That's
to
amazing,
get back.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah, I don't have as much time for the blogging and the writing as I would like to do so.
Well, you're a founder. You got to get to work. You got
exactly.
lots to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Just a little bit of work on the back end, and we're
yeah.
getting ready for another seminar in the new year, which we actually have participants come from all over the
yeah.
U.S. So that's not a small project.
I can imagine you're busy, and I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me. So if anyone wants to reach out to you and maybe pick your brain, maybe get some advice, because it sounds like you've gone through a lot of stuff that maybe other people are just beginning going through. What's the best way to find you, Karen?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So if you have any pelvic pain or pelvic health issues, you can reach out to us at bridgeforpelvicpain.org. And then I am also on LinkedIn and would be absolutely thrilled if anybody had any questions about founding a nonprofit or any other questions or thoughts about our talk today.
Brilliant. So you're Karen Willis, Karen with a C, which is typical American, can't spell any name just normally. So
yes.
Karen Willis. So people can find you on LinkedIn. And then, yeah, absolutely, bridgeforpelvicpain.org. You've got a lot of great resources on there, which would apply to people all over the world. Like, they don't have to actually be local. You've got good stuff for them on there, don't you?
Yes, yes. Yeah, we have, you know, an advisory committee, and they're located all across the world.
Okay.
And so resources for patients all over the world as well.
Brilliant. Good on you. Well, thank you very much. Have you got any last words you want to rant about with founder syndrome before I cut you off? Basically, your message is for people to kind of open their mind a little bit with it and just not just take in the negative articles. Anything else?
No, just I guess the final thought would be, just when you hear the word nonprofit founder, just maybe if they would think a little bit more like a for-profit entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. I'd like if we just replace some of the words, if we called it a startup instead of a nonprofit, and we
yes.
called you an entrepreneur instead of a founder, then you'd be celebrated as a hero, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes. And yeah, it's a matter of semantics, I guess.
Completely, completely. All right, Karen, I'm going to leave you to it. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And thank you so much again for chatting to us. I hope we get to speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Simon. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Take care.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training. And use coupon code PODCAST. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.